You're listening to the Global Research News Hour, broadcast out of Winnipeg on campus community radio station CKUW 95.9 FM and on the Progressive Radio Network at prn.fm. We are also podcast on the website globalresearch.ca.
Speaking right now with Dane Wigington, who has an extensive background in solar energy and is a former employee of Bechtel Power Corporation, and was a licensed contractor in California and Arizona. He is one of the most outspoken people out there these days on the topic of geoengineering, and that is, of course, proposed as a remedy for some of the concerns that we have about climate change, as we heard from an earlier interview. So I'm going to introduce our guest right now. Thank you very much for joining us, Dane Wigington.
Thank you, Michael, and thank you for trying to put more light on this issue that, again, as I mentioned to you off-air, people would prioritize if they understood the gravity of this issue and the degree to which it's hampering the entire life process of the planet and the planet's life support systems.
Maybe just for starters, could you help us understand what got you motivated to focus so much on this specific issue, or what alerted you to the idea that it was even a problem?
I'm not an activist. I'm not politically oriented. I've never been involved with any such battle like this. It's not something I wanted to do. But as I completed my home in the Pacific Northwest, expecting to find clean air, a large off-grid home, the grid patterns that would appear over our region on an intermittent basis on some days would block 70 to 80% of my solar PV uptake. Clearly something was going on. There was non-commercial directions with some of these large grid patterns of what appeared to be spraying. And I quickly came to the subject of geoengineering, was quite shocked that I had never heard of this issue. This is in about 2000. This is 2001. And it described exactly what I saw: solar obscuration, the blocking of the sun. That's the express goal of solar radiation management, which is part of stratospheric aerosol geoengineering. I look for the primary elements named in patents. And by the way, there's about 150 patents that we have posted on our website, geoengineeringwatch.org. So there was a lot of data, and the primary elements in those patents I looked for in the precipitation tests, tested at the state lab, found what I did not want to find: primary element aluminum. And, Michael, in the course of the following 5 years, the levels of aluminum in our precipitation went from a baseline of 7 parts per billion, which is already very high given our remote location surrounded by forest. There's no industry or anything. And in the next 5 years, we saw levels climb to as much as 3,450 parts per billion, and that's literally highly toxic rain. That's almost a 50,000% increase. So it's killing everything here where we're at, changing soil pHs, killing soil microbes. The forest is in sharp decline, and it's just been a battle I never wanted. I never, ever wanted this, but quite simply, when you know every breath you take is laden with this toxic material, and you know that from lab testing, hard not to face this battle.
So you noticed that increase in aluminum concentration. That was in your area. Did you start looking at other areas to see if there were similar results taking place in your initial inquiries?
We did. And in fact, the results were the same. And there's a great variance in the level of metal in various tests because, of course, depending on where you're at underneath what's being dispersed, you may or may not get high levels, but we've never had a negative. There's a lot of metal floating around in the air. And we have subsequent peer-reviewed study, one from 2010, on 1,000 whales from the most remote places on the planet, and they were tested for inorganics at the last minute, and they contained, the report used this exact term, jaw-dropping levels of aluminum in their tissues. So when we look at human health tests, human tests for blood, hair, and urine on these heavy metals, virtually every subject tested has off-the-chart levels of these metals. And then we look at the what we would expect to see with rise in human respiratory ailment. It's off the charts. And every ailment that we can associate and connect with heavy metals like aluminum, barium, all of them are off the scale. In fact, we have recent study from MIT stating that on the current trajectory, we know autism, for example, has gone from 1 in 5,000 in 1975 to 1 in 47 today in that 39-year period. And now researchers from MIT, and that's certainly one of the most recognized research institutions on the planet, saying on the current trajectory, within 10 years, 1 in 2 children will have autism. Should be headlines everywhere, but it's not. Because these programs, the power structure is trying desperately to hide for obvious reasons. If the population knew that they were a part of this grand and lethal experiment and their health had been permanently compromised and their environment on which they and their children depend for survival has been damaged beyond repair in any time frame that matters, and not saying this is the only cause, certainly we have too many causes of environmental degradation to even begin to consider on the show, but I believe mathematically it's inarguable that the greatest single all-out assault on the biosphere is global climate engineering. Not the only one. Again, 100 million tons of carbon in the atmosphere a day is a horrific problem, forest degradation and so forth. I mean, there's too many things to list, but the greatest all-out assault to Earth's overall life support systems, I believe mathematically, is climate engineering.
This topic has been very much tainted with that term conspiracy theory, right?
Let's go that way.
And that's, so, you know, put some facts on the table that this is in fact happening.
What I would respond to for those who question whether or not this is going on, we have film footage up close at altitude from right behind these aircraft, nozzles visible, turning the spray on and off. That's film of the crime happening, and that proof cannot be disputed. And those who deny that are simply not willing to face this issue, period. So, and we have people, the claim that these condensation trails are normal behind these aircraft, also a lie. All commercial aircraft and all military tankers have high-bypass turbofan jet engines. We have a 20-minute tutorial about that engine on the homepage of geoengineeringwatch.org, but that engine is basically a giant fan. 85% of the air that passes through that engine is non-combusted. By design, that engine is nearly incapable of making a condensation trail, except under the most extreme circumstances. And people's sense of deductive reasoning should kick in when they see a trail turning on and off, and it looks like it was cut with a knife. That's not condensation. And people grab at straws also on the metal that's coming down in the rain and think, well, it's all coming from China. We have CARB studies, California Air Resource Board studies, proving that these metals don't float across oceans, with the exception of mercury, which converts to a gaseous state. So again, we have every single dot connecting. We have the U.S. military stating that climate change is the greatest national security threat of all, which means they don't have to discuss anything they do in the sky. We have no regulation whatsoever. We have agencies who are told not to look for these particulates. And I know that because I've been in high-level EPA meetings in Sacramento, arranged by congressional rep, five top EPA staffers there, a closed-door meeting, and I was told in my face, they're mandated not to look for these materials. They're told to look for combustion particulates only, and these materials are not amongst them. And we have a whole air testing agency that tests generally for PM10, 10 microns, at best PM2.5, we're talking about particles exponentially smaller. So they don't get picked up in any of the testing equipment. That's all by design. So again, we have film footage of it happening. We have mountains of this material falling on us, matches the patents exactly. We have military stating their goal to own or control the weather. That's an actual military document. We have the entire climate science community discussing this issue, but pretending it's not going on because to state otherwise is a bad career decision. So while everybody's pretending this isn't happening, Michael, the ship is going down.
When did this application or this geoengineering start? I mean, I imagine it started at a fairly primitive level and maybe has become sophisticated over time.
That appears to be the case. In fact, all data indicates that the programs reached a significant level in the late 40s. And interestingly enough, we see on the global temperature rise graph, which was fairly linear from 1850 till the late 1940s, when these programs ramped up, and we have data to corroborate that they were ramped up then, patents and other documents, we saw a very anomalous leveling off of global temperature rise. And we would expect the initial input to have much more effect when you start to saturate the atmosphere with light scattering particulates. The initial effect is much greater because the negative effects have not yet kicked in. So we saw a leveling off of temperatures from the late 40s to about the early 70s, which had a lot of the climate science community scratching their heads. They couldn't figure out what was leveling off those temperatures. And we have reports from, for example, from Stanford on the Arctic haze. Now, the poles is an area where it appears these programs were really centered initially. And Stanford even reported an Arctic haze with metallic particles they could not figure out the source of. So, again, there's so many indications of these programs going on. And a document I found on the NASA archive site from 1966, 80 pages long. People can look at this. I don't want anybody to believe what I'm saying. Google 1966 government document geoengineering. You'll find it. And it's a presidential document outlining the scope and scale of the programs as of 1966, budgets in the hundreds of millions of dollars, 10 major federal agencies involved, about 12 major universities involved. There is so much data here that's being completely ignored. So much.
Okay. Is it just the U.S. government that's involved with these the activities?
No. In fact, there absolutely appears to be corroboration between even opposing governments. I also found a photograph from 1968, a media photograph of the Soviet weather modification scientists touring the U.S. weather modification facilities at the height of the Cold War. You have China. In fact, you probably remember this, Michael. China announced that don't worry about inclement weather over the Olympics. They would make sure there was none. You might perhaps remember those headlines. And China openly announced they were highly involved in the weather modification. They have a Bureau of Weather Modification. In fact, one interesting scenario that people should consider, in 2009, even mainstream media covered this. If people search Chinese scientists create artificial snowstorm, the Chinese Bureau of Weather Modification created artificially chemically nucleated snow over Beijing. It did $1 billion worth of damage on the third go-around, at which time there was a lot of unhappy people, and they went more covert with their programs. But we see what absolutely appears to be massive ice nucleation happening over the continental U.S. And anybody who doesn't note that the weather is very different is not paying much attention. I mean, we have temperature swings that are absolutely beyond belief. One example I'll give you, Amarillo, Texas last year, May 1st, 2013, all-time record high in the ground was almost 100 degrees. Some reports were 100. It snowed the next day. Now, anybody who thinks it's a radical fluctuation like that is natural doesn't know much about meteorology. And so we're seeing these kind of extremes. We saw Minneapolis, Minnesota in late December. The nighttime low was almost 55 degrees. Media didn't report much on this because now they're simply trying to paint the picture that the planet is freezing over and, you know, as if there's no climate damage. They're trying to hide that damage. But almost 55 degrees in Minneapolis, and then about 5 to 6 days later, it was 20 below. That's a 70-degree fluctuation. I mean, again, when you chemically nucleate, you can create a radically cold layer on the ground, but that layer is very shallow. It's a very shallow layer, and the fluctuations in temperature, Michael, I'm sure people are noticing if they're halfway awake.
Well, absolutely. Although it's more commonly explained to us as being related to CO2 concentrations.
Well, on that note, you know, again, CO2 is a problem at this level and increasing at this speed. And I'm not a Gore fan, and I'm not a carbon credits fan. Al Gore played exactly the part the power structure wanted him to play. He's a part of the power structure. Carbon credits are a sham. But putting 100 million tons of CO2 in the atmosphere a day is a problem, and it's a much bigger problem with climate engineering that keeps the planet from responding. Normally, when the CO2 increases, you would have much more rainfall. You'd have a stimulation for the boreal forests, so they start to increase their growth. They start to uptake that carbon. Now they can't because the bioavailable metals are toxifying the soils. We have peer-reviewed study on this. We know the effect of bioavailable metal exposure. It causes organisms to stop nutrient uptake. So the trees can't respond from the stimulation of the carbon. They're being poisoned, literally. We know that dispersing these particulates in the atmosphere, this spraying of the metal particulates, destroys ozone. We have massive northern and some of southern hemisphere ozone holes now not being disclosed. We have UVB levels. This is extremely important. We have UVB levels, and we're metering this with state-of-the-art meters, about 1,000% higher, 10 times higher than we're being told. So it's burning the trees, burning their foliage.
When you say UVB, you mean it's a particular frequency of ultraviolet radiation.
Correct. If UVB is in the range of 320 nanometers to 280, you have on the UV scale, you have UVA at the top, about 400 to 320 nanometer, UVB 320 to 280, UVC 280 to 100. Below UVC, you have X-ray. So we're not only seeing the full spectrum of UVB that's about 1,000% higher than we're being told, we're actually picking up UVC on the surface now as well. Not major amounts, but the fact that we're getting any is extremely alarming. We're told UVC stops 100,000 feet up in the atmosphere. So the climate engineering is disrupting the hydrological cycle, toxifying our air, soils, and waters, every breath we take, shredding the ozone layer. Again, this can only be described as an all-out assault against life, and it's interesting, the whole climate science community, which is in total denial about the existence of these programs because they know it's a bad career decision to say otherwise, but none of them, although they're all talking about geoengineering and that we need to do it immediately, again, as if it's not going on already, none of them mention, oh, by the way, we all have to breathe what they're spraying. I mean, at this point, the quote-unquote science community is nothing more than paid disinformation people as a whole. I'm not saying there's not exceptions, but I mean, it's alarming right now, the amount of disinformation that's going on from the quote-unquote science community.
What about, I mean, you were talking about, chemtrails, or you may have referred to the term solar radiation management. Is that the only form of geoengineering that you're principally concerned about?
No, there's many aspects to these programs. And again, the science terms are imperative to use. That's what gains traction for our cause. The chemtrails term is not a science term, and it's been intentionally marginalized as, quote, conspiracy theory. But we have the ionosphere heaters as well, HARP. Most people have heard of HARP, High Frequency Active Auroral Research Program. So we have, that's only one facility.
Based in Alaska?
Glaucona, Alaska, yes. But there's 2 to 3 dozen large ground-based facilities around the globe, an unknown number of mobile facilities like SBX radar. People can Google that. It looks like a massive golf ball on an oil derrick. So they can, with the data available even on HARP, HARP can transmit 3.5 billion watts, billion with a B, into the ionosphere, which creates an electrical chain reaction, heats the ionosphere. The data indicates it can heat the ionosphere to 15,000 degrees Fahrenheit over areas hundreds of square miles. This creates a bulge in space in the atmosphere, and this can steer the jet stream. And in fact, we now have jet stream configurations that are historically unprecedented. We have the, quote, ridiculously resilient ridge of high pressure over the west that blocks the jet stream. In fact, we posted data that shows a jet stream moving directly west to east, and when it gets a particular distance off the U.S. west coast, it looks like it's hitting a wall. It splits in two different directions, like it's hitting a solid obstruction, and we know the ionosphere heaters can create high pressure zones. So is that what we're seeing? And we have indication that the network of these ionosphere heaters are being used to steer the jet stream in almost any configuration they want, just like the polar vortex, which is now the norm, which was a giant teardrop that comes down in such a configuration that was not seen historically. So why would we not think this is going on? We have an atmosphere that's much more conductive because of the metallic particles, makes the atmosphere more conductive, so makes these signals much more effective. So we're being exposed to the toxic metal spraying particulates, the microwaving signal of the ionosphere heaters. It's quite a toxic brew, Michael, and we're seeing the effect in the environment and human health statistics. It's quite horrific. And now we have methane entering the atmosphere, and this is extremely important because methane, there's so much methane in the Arctic alone. There's enough methane mathematically to create a Permian-style mass extinction 100 times over. That methane is already beginning to release. Climate engineering appears to be worsening that situation, not making it better.
You so had two previous interviews on that topic of methane releases. One of them was from Paul Beckwith of the Arctic Methane Emergency Group. And, I mean, the science certainly seemed to be very compelling. The only thing is that Mr. Beckwith did seem to be a supporter of geoengineering. I was wondering, and they gave a press conference during the Lima talks that seemed to, I didn't find it got a lot of media attention, but I was wondering what you were thinking when you see that kind of apparent embrace of geoengineering as if it's this is something maybe we should do rather than something that's been happening.
I'm familiar with the presentation you mentioned, and media is not covering this. They're doing everything they can to hide the methane situation. Mr. Beckwith has been, I followed a lot of his work. He and the AMA group, the Arctic Methane Emergency Group, and Guy McPherson, I know Guy, and they've been the most straightforward with the data on the methane and how grave that situation is, but where they are not being truthful, and I believe they're perhaps being threatened on this note. I don't know. I feel this from Guy and in communication I've had with him. You know, he won't speak directly to this issue, but I believe that they are in some manner being threatened to not admit that the climate engineering is going on is just as much denial as those who won't admit to the methane issue. So there's plenty of denial to go around all the way here. And again, with Beckwith, or McPherson, or the AMIC group, I would argue this. If they think that they're putting out information for the common good, and yet they call for climate engineering when we know we have 6.5 decades of it, and clearly it's not helping, it's making a bad situation exponentially worse, we're all sort of caught between a rock and a hard place, from a society that doesn't want to admit there's anything wrong with the climate to a climate science community that says, yes, the climate's damaged, and we need to undertake geoengineering, and the climate science community not admitting to the fact that climate engineering is a total disaster. It can't work. It can't work. The negative effects far outweigh any perceived benefit, and it's making a bad situation worse, not better.
Yeah, and just as a matter of accuracy, I know that Guy McPherson, you mentioned, we did talk to him as well. He is not supportive of geoengineering.
Well, if Guy mentioned that, then you know I haven't communicated him for a long time. I'm very, very happy to hear that. Very happy to hear that.
Okay. Yeah. So you're talking about like the impacts on climate, the impacts on trees, impacts on human beings. All these very negative impacts. Apparently, are there other impacts that you think that we really need to be focused on, just in terms of the, you know, what the impacts are on, you know, biologically?
The ramifications from climate engineering are so broad that it's truly hard to quantify them. For example, if we look at the ozone depletion and the effect of the increased UV on plankton, no plankton, no people. That's simple for most to understand. Again, global plankton stocks down now 50 to 60%. A lot of reasons for that, but mathematically, a primary reason appears to be the incredibly intense UVB, which kills plankton. So plankton can't rise to the surface and feed as they normally do, and when we see plankton stocks declining to this degree uniformly around the globe, clearly there's a large overlying issue, and no ozone layer, no terrestrial life on Earth as well. So from that to the soil toxification to the totally disrupted hydrological cycle, again, instead of the boreal forest being a carbon sink as it should be and as it would be, especially with increased carbon in the atmosphere, it's now a carbon source. The boreal forests are dying around the globe. I mean, this is a statistical fact. So from every direction, I mean, there's negative and very dire ramifications from climate engineering, but you have a military-industrial complex that is committed to this. It's a mechanism of power. It's being used for weather warfare around the globe. Any country that doesn't toe the line for the U.S., finds itself in a weather disaster. So quite simply, they're not going to give it up until the population is screaming mad in the streets with their pitchforks and torches. But we are all facing a life or death scenario here. People better wake up fast if we're going to have anything left to salvage.
You've kind of touched on the biggest question I have, which is, like, why is this happening? Why are they doing this? Is it, you know, just the next frontier in military technology? Is it an effort to, just as Monsanto's and the GMO crowd are trying to control the food supplies, is about controlling the weather for economic reasons? Is this playing God? Is this about depopulating the earth? Do you have any good take on what the motives are behind this whole dynamic of geoengineering?
I think it's a mistake for us to try to put it in any one box, because I think it's all the above and likely much more. So ultimately, any scenario like this comes down to power and control. In fact, the document I found in 1966, or from 1966, indicated their clear desire to decide where it rained too much, where it didn't rain enough, how they could use this to their advantage, both militarily and in our own nation. So it comes down to power and control. But once you hamper these systems and do as much damage as they have done, then while they're exercising that power and control, they're also trying to cover up that damage. And that's a lot of what's going on right now, I would argue. They're just simply trying to create the perception of a climate system that's not as badly damaged as it is. In fact, if we look at the NASA GISS maps, we see the coldest, the most anomalously cold place in the whole world for a very extended time is the eastern half of the North American continent. Now, why would that be? It's creating a public perception with these cold snaps on the ground that, in fact, the planet's not warming when the planet is in total meltdown. So, and climate engineering is making that worse, not better. So, again, I don't want anybody to believe anything I'm saying. I just simply hope they investigate that while the eastern U.S. is in a two-week chill, we have an awful lot of temperature records being set around the globe. And if they started this in the late 40s, it appeared that they were attempting to start to mitigate what they knew would be a climate problem, that putting, you know, again, our most recent figure of 100 million tons of CO2 in the atmosphere a day, that's a problem. Cutting down the boreal forest, that's a problem. Paving the planet, that's a problem. So, as always, we see the attempt to control everything in the military document, owning the weather, again, very telling document. People should look that one up. So it's power, control, ultimately, and that involves a lot of different things. Control against other nations that are not conforming to U.S. policy, if you will. Weather derivatives trading, that's another. We have those who run the climate modification or have a gaming casino on the stock market for where the disasters are going to occur. We have so many different elements being played out, Michael, that people need to investigate it. But it's a very complex situation, a lot of layers to the onion.
Well, Dane Wigington, I really want to thank you for this very important introduction to this whole predicament dilemma that we face. Dane Wigington is the lead researcher with Geoengineering Watch. His website, geoengineeringwatch.org, provides numerous documentation and ongoing presentations and other research, which is a call to arms for the concerns around one of the greatest threats, if not the greatest threat facing the planet today. Dane Wigington, thank you, I think, for this opportunity to talk to us.
Thank you. I hope everybody simply investigates. We do not sell anything on our site. We are non-political. We're simply trying to sound the alarm and provide a tool for people. So thank you for helping to give this issue a voice, and I hope people investigate.
You've been listening to the Global Research News Hour. You can hear our programs every week on CKUW 95.9 FM in Winnipeg and on partnering radio stations across the country. We are broadcast on the Progressive Radio Network at prn.fm. You can also download each episode from the website globalresearch.ca. To leave feedback on this program, email globalresearchnewshour@gmail.com. I am series host and producer Michael Welch. Join us again next week.